continent. Suddenly, the chill in that southern state shot through the nation. The shuttle Challenger had exploded. Divers offshore searched. NASA has yet to release details of the months-long recovery mission. Information leaks support in a general way our dread suppositions, pieces of wreckage, and astronauts and their gear strewn about the ocean floor. NASA tells us no more. And yet officially I can inform you of something that was rescued from the wreckage. Something was rescued intact and unharmed. And that is the rest of the story. Not everything aboard a space shuttle has to be there, you know. Certain equipment is essential to the mission, and yet many items comprise extraneous shuttle garbage. The astronauts themselves are permitted to bring 20 personal items each. Beyond these are a host of unlikely effects sent from various organizations and individuals. Things like soccer balls and plant seeds, wooden gavels and watercolors, university pennants and Indian arrowheads and parchment drawings and even a pair of spurs. Everything brought aboard a space shuttle must meet certain criteria, must personally be approved by NASA's administrator, and yet there are hundreds of such items included on every shuttle flight. 3 years ago, Scoutmaster Bill Talbert had an idea for a special space shuttle project in which his Boy Scout troop could participate. He decided to procure some object that the boys could send to NASA that might be taken on a future shuttle mission. Scoutmaster Talbert, once a major in the Air Force, had connections, and he used those connections to procure an item of sufficient significance. The boys, delighted, then donated their prized possession to NASA. It would be among the much hardware and seven astronauts aboard an upcoming shuttle mission called Challenger. And thus, in a ball of fire and flying shrapnel, did the gift from Bill Talbert's Boy Scout troop vanish. The nation was moved by that tragedy. And yet especially affected were the boys of Troop 514. Because part of each of them was aboard. Part of each of them was destroyed. Or so they believed. For among the top secret whatever which divers recovered from the depths was that one special item presented by Bill Talbert's boys. And it was recovered, alone of all the items, miraculously, utterly unscorched, undamaged. Thursday, tomorrow, the U.S. Constitution gloriously, formally celebrates her 200th birthday in Philadelphia. Named the state of Colorado's official delegation to that grand birthday party is Boy Scout Troop 514, the honor guard from which will bear their rescued shuttle gift to lead the official parade, with President Reagan himself following, a symbol of something that refuses to die. It has been called, and yet it was that, when it flew over the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., from where Scoutmaster Talbert had originally procured it with special permission. For you see, one cold January morning in 1986, there was a rocket's red glare, and then a bomb burst in air. But through the night came this proof. One American flag was still there. And now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Slow Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on the right choice, KPRL.
And welcome back to Open Mic Friday. Darsha of the Darsha and Kenny Show, flying solo today. Kenny is out, left yesterday, I think. He'll be back in a few days. But for this show today, he did send me over some information. And I will get to that. And there's also some school bond issues that I would talk about in his honor. But first, we'll go right to the phone lines. Today is about exposure and declassification. And again, we have two phone lines, so we'll see how we're going to do here. Well, welcome to Sound Off.
Hi, good afternoon. So how did all that parking mess begin and how did it continue and how did it end? Well, my personal belief is there were a lot of payoffs, and those payoffs were between Ty Lewis and the parking people who brought the program to us. He actually is the one who met with them and brought that parking program, and not a prayer in hell will you ever convince me that there wasn't an extraordinary amount of payoffs going on. And I'm going to include John Hammond in that too, because John Hammond and Ty Lewis were, you know, in bed together, not literally, but in bed together with this program, of keeping this program going so that somebody could keep getting paid off and making money from it. And that's exactly what happened. But when the pressure was too great on the city council from, 2,800 people who signed that petition to get rid of it, they couldn't go any further. And so then, at some point or another, they had to redeem Ty Lewis, and so they brought him back with a bogus lawsuit against Chris Bosch. And, you know, I'm glad to see that he went out of here with some money, you know, because hopefully he's going to need that. And but he certainly had his tail between his legs. It was a payoff from day one.
And I agree with you, and the follow of the money is exactly what we end up. This is where we end up. Going, it didn't make any sense. So what's actually happening here? So who's benefiting? And with Ty Lewis, I think you can look at, where did he come from? He was the chief of police. Where do the fines go to when someone is given a parking ticket? Where do the monies get paid, into what budget, when those fines get paid? And who's processing those payments? And who benefits? So I know you know the answers to some of those questions.
And I do. And you, and the other one that you have to throw into the mix is the city attorney. You know, our attorneys, BBK, made a boatload of money off of this entire program. They've never been required. The city council has, including, you know, the mayor, who has the authority to do this, has never required BBK to pay all of those monies back. So when you look at all of that, if the word corruption doesn't, you know, rise to the top of your brain, you're not paying attention. Because there was a lot of it going on between a lot of those people. And, you know, thrilled to death that John Hammond is going away, and that hopefully somebody else comes in. And when you talk about, when Cody talked about the endorsements that have already had from people that we knew nothing about, look real close at that. Look very carefully at the webpage with the endorsements and who's behind them with the money.
And so what do you see when you're saying, you know, these are current governmental officials, and one is John Hammond, the current mayor of Paso Robles, who was appointed,
right,
and so has chosen not to run for office. And I have my own opinions about how there are a number of, quote, elected officials that are choosing to not run for office next time.
I have my opinions on that also.
I feel that somehow I have assisted in some way.
Yes.
with those.
Yes.
Not specifically John Hammond, but certainly with Bruce Gibson. So that is one that I will continue until my last breath to, yes, let people know that Bruce Gibson did not win the November 2022 election. I have the actual numbers. So
we can
revisit that one. But nonetheless, we have County Council Rita Neal, who 6 months into negotiating a 4-year contract that was $400,000+ a year, 6 months in, she decided that she was going to retire and spend more time with her family. And yeah, that's the terminology I use when people decide to spend more time with their family. There's some things going on. It's not necessarily just that they want to spend more time with their families.
They're feet were getting too close to the fire.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So, and across the state, I can tell you that there were declarations, many of our community are right here in San Luis Obispo County, where we signed declarations indicating that our civil rights have been violated in this manner, and this manner. And in our county, there were probably over 2,000, 2,500. And in this state, through New California State, I just keep bringing that up because that who actually has been taking steps, taking forward action and trying to hold some people accountable, over 80,000 declarations from we the people have been filed against governmental officials, supervisors, county clerk recorders, you name it, and having to do with COVID. So also, if there were like the Penny Borensteins, I'll name names as to ones who were given declarations in our county, but the supervisors, so Debbie Arnold, Bruce Gibson, who else was on Don Ortiz's leg, John Pichon, and I think Jimmy Paulding was one there, Lynn Compton, perhaps, Penny Borenstein, the district attorney's office. So there were many governmental officials that were given these declarations, and it was supposed to be a personal response. We want to hear from you. We believe that our rights have been violated. We want to hear from you as to what your response is. And it was supposed to go to every single person, and they were 100 at a time minimum, supposed to have a personal response back to that person. The only one that responded was Debbie Arnold.
Oh, my. Yeah. So, okay. So, I'm sorry. I'm going to go back to the city.
Because absolutely.
I live here. So, I just want this next election, I want people to just pay attention and do the work. Listen to the comments that are being made. Listen to the critiques. Listen to the history. Listen to who you've got endorsing who. And ask yourself why that is. And, you know, going back to the city council meeting on Tuesday night, you know, when his name was mentioned by John Hammond. What the hell was that? You know, and I just look at all of that and say, folks, you have got to figure out where you want your city to go, and you've got to elect the people with a level of integrity and honesty that are going to take this city and you along with them down the path of you know, doing the right thing instead of being self-serving. Stop electing people who have such a vested interest in businesses, et cetera, here, that they can't do anything except a payback. That's vital.
Thank you. And thank you for bringing these forward and continuing to stay on it. I know that you have done the research. You do look beyond, I know with the whole cannabis situation and what's at the city, and trying to actually look to see what is in the best interest of the people in this city. And when we have governmental officials, and you mentioned the attorneys, so how much do the attorneys, I mean, it's like $100,000 a month. It's $1.2 million last time I looked. To have, quote, representation, legal representation for this city.
And you think that they don't have connections and a vested interest in keeping these things that we bring up and we object to? You think they don't have a vested interest in keeping them going? Of course they do. That's what they're all about. But what always concerns me is the people who have a vested interest in them as well. You know, they're in bed together, holding hands, making decisions together about how they're going to go forward and what they're going to stop and what they're going to allow. That has to end at some point. We have to get back to electing people who don't have all those connections and don't have all those vested interests, and just get back to people who have a level of integrity and can move this city forward in an honest manner.
Well, thank you for wanting to bring it back to the honesty and the righteousness and where we have a moral people, because it is only with a moral people that we can actually have a government and that represents the people. So thank you for paying attention and for bringing these things forward and keep speaking out. My understanding is there are two mayoral candidates. One is Bill Britton, as has already been discussed, and Faith Frankel, who had pulled papers, Dr. Frankel's daughter, and also a doctor. And so I do think that she's a person that wants to represent the people, wants to look at it in a concern, you know, from a concerned citizen standpoint. So we'll have more information on those later, and thank you for paying attention. I have another call coming in, and we'll try to get that in before the break.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Welcome to Open Mic Fridays. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Yes. Welcome to Open Mic Friday. You're on the air.
Well, as Darcy, as you know, I have been dwelling into city politics forever. Including the, I just found out the reason that Caltrans is against a signal at Airport Road and 46. I mean, all the councilmen think it's a good idea, but Caltrans is against it. You know that Caltrans is against signals on any of their highways. They want to remove them all. That's how crazy Caltrans is. Anyway, that's a side issue. On this issue of the mayor race, Bill Britton joined Rotary and announced that he was going to run for mayor, he hadn't announced to the public much. And at that point, John Hammond and Steve Gregory said they were endorsing him. Well, I knew Bill Britton from the Airport Commission, and he also has a job at Cal Poly. And he helped get some of the space stuff going at Cal Poly. And I thought, well, maybe this is a good guy for Paso Robles. And so I was enthusiastic that we had a candidate wanting to get Spaceport out there. And Bill asked for my endorsement and to run for mayor. Well, then all of a sudden I got to thinking when I saw him with Sharon Roden. Sharon Roden viciously, along with John Hammond, attacked Chris Bausch. Chris Bausch, they thought, was going to be a guinea pig, and they'd get rid of him because they thought they were going to prove Chris Bausch was the cause of Ty Lewis having to resign. Well, the Trib thought they had a story. And so they asked for all of his documents off of his cell phone.
How many public records requests?
7,000. Well, this judge we have, Kelly, he's smarter than they gave him credit for. Because he knows that you can't produce 7,000 documents in 15 days. So he gave Chris more time. Well, then the city attorney told Chris, we want to review those documents before you turn them over to the Trib. Oh, okay. I guess you're my attorney. You got it right. Then all of a sudden, the city attorney, who we've already discussed had problems with the parking situation, said to Chris, we're not going to represent you anymore. Oh, really? I'm one of the city councilmen that's being sought out by the Trib. And they said, tough. We're not going to represent you. So Chris had to get his own attorney. And I followed that case religiously. And Judge Kelly was smarter than all of them. He saw what was going on in this cabal. And then Sharon Roden gets up in front of city council and says, I turned in my documents and I'm not even on city council anymore. And Chris Bausch hasn't turned in his documents. Sharon Roden doesn't understand legal procedures. technically, Chris can't talk about the case while it's still pending. And it was still pending. And I confronted her about that. And she said, oh, yes, he can. Well, Chris broke the rule and defended himself. But in the long run, what happened was, after the city finally turned everything over to the city with all their redactions over to the court and to the Trib, guess what? Chris Bausch was totally vindicated. He had nothing to do with Ty Lewis's resignation. Ty Lewis set up a cabal with John Hammond and Sharon Roden to try and get him a big bundle of money for retiring. That backfired. And he, instead of over $1 million, he got just over $100,000 or something. I don't know exactly how much he got. But they didn't want him anymore anyway.
And what do you think the connection with the Tribune and potential connection with the attorneys?
Doesn't matter. Because you know what the judge ordered? The judge ordered, since the city had not complied timely, and at the instructions of the city attorney, he made the city pay the made the city pay the Trib some attorney fees, about a fourth of what they wanted. And they also made the city pay Chris Bausch's attorney fees.
And especially because
Chris Bausch is the only guy I think that is not corrupt on that city council.
And as I was mentioning earlier, is they're really not used to people just taking a stand and saying, I'm not going to give in. You're using lawfare against me. And I can say it's tiring. It's very stressful. There's a lot going on. And you recognize that the system is working against you. They're using unlimited resources that are actually your resources against you. And so
you gotta go. Anyway,
yeah,
I got enough of this.
We gotta go, but thank you for bringing that up. And that is a city city issue once again, where and it seems to be that, we'll call it, Slow Tribune tends to be in the middle of the mix. And we have that with the county clerk's office. We have it with other areas of government as well. So we'll come back from the break, and if you, the other caller that called in that dropped off, if you want to call in, we'll
this
be right
Fox
back.
This Business News Update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages ending higher for the day and week, with the S&P 500 notching its 26th record close of the year after the July jobs report was softer than expected, with investors rethinking whether the Fed will raise interest rates anytime soon. Employers unexpectedly cut 23,000 jobs last month. Economists were expecting that 80,000 jobs would be added during the month. The unemployment rate dipped to 4.1% only because workers left the job market. Tech and healthcare were the best performing sectors, while energy lagged. The Magnificent Seven big cap tech stocks were mostly higher, led by Tesla and Nvidia. The Dow winners, Goldman Sachs, Amgen, and Sherwin-Williams. The Dow decliners, Caterpillar, Visa, and Chevron. The Dow up 152 points. The Nasdaq higher by 342. S&P 500 up 48. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
You're probably listening to this in your car, so let me ask you. Would you drive without insurance? Of course not. So why is your retirement portfolio unprotected? Gold is portfolio insurance. It helps de-risk your savings when markets get unpredictable. Noble Gold Investments has helped thousands of Americans do exactly that, with no high-pressure sales and thousands of five-star reviews. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com. Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals involves risk. Consult with your tax or financial professional before making any investment decisions.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Listen to this real Paso Robles Glass customer where they installed 23 replacement Milgard Tuscany windows and two sliding doors.
Steve Eklund, Craig Smith as an architect and a proud and honored client of Paso Robles Glass. Hey, the boys are doing a great job. They just left. Everything is just fine. Extremely good crew. You got that crew is exceptional. They're all hardworking guys, very careful, very cautious. All is good. I think they have one more day tomorrow, wrap it up, the finished work. I'd like to set up a time to come up and see you next week. I've got a big, big project I'd like you to look at for me. Whatever works on your end, just wanted to let you know, Steve. Take care. Bye.
Get rid of your old broken windows and get new Milgard energy-efficient windows and doors with Milgard's ironclad lifetime warranty.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
And welcome back to Open Mic Friday, the Darsha and Kenny show. Kenny is not here on mic number two. I did get here before him, so I am in the driver's seat, as they call it. So today we're talking about exposure, disclosure, declassification. I have some that have gone on the federal level, some on the state level, some on the county level, and some on the city level. So I did have a request from a text message to talk about something that has to do with elections. I'm happy to oblige, but please, if you have an area of interest or something that you have seen or there's corruption involved and you want to get to the bottom of it, perhaps someone else has some information or knows something, and as a community, we can start sorting this out and getting it to where we can have a we the people, a by the people, for the people, and of the people. So we do have a call coming in. We'll go right to the phone line. And welcome. You're on Sound Off.
Yeah, Darsha, how are you doing?
Doing great.
Hey, I wanted to comment on something I said on this morning's show. This last Tuesday at the city council meeting, your mayor, John Hammond, decided it was a good idea to call out Bill Britton as a real impotent person, on the airport board. Not calling out the airport board itself, but specifically making mention of a particular person who happens to be running for mayor. It was a blatant campaign commercial done from the dais by the mayor, who should know better. He doesn't. John Hammond's going to go down, as I've repeated, in my opinion, as the worst mayor this city has ever had. From the debacle, from the parking situation, from his support of Ty Lewis, calling me and others people who were involved in a conspiracy that never happened, costing this city, probably when we find out from the way the water situation worked out, millions of dollars to this city. This guy has been a freaking disaster. And for him to come out and endorsing a person running for mayor from the dais like he did, pulling that stunt, I think people ought to be very suspicious about who this person is running for mayor and who's really in charge of the future and who's interested in the future interests of the people of this city, because it ain't the people that are being endorsed by people like John Hammond.
And how is it that you think that we can have good ideas? You know, let's take the 46, and it's a valid concern where we have 4,000 homes that are being built on the east side, and we have 3-4 ways that you can get from the east side to the west side. How can good ideas come forward and get looked at? What we have with the 46 interchange at Airport Road is years and years and studies and studies and another study and, oh, let's do another study. When we didn't have the money then. We don't have the money now. We're looking to Caltrans to pay for some of that. Caltrans doesn't want a light that would be one of the least expensive, maybe most effective ways to handle. Because even if you have an underpass, there's no way for all of the traffic from Airport Road to get east and westbound on 46. And so having an overpass or having an underpass, it still doesn't accomplish helping to alleviate some of the east side, you know, that could go to 46 and either go westbound or eastbound it to 101. So how do good ideas come forward?
Well, they're not going to, because there is a movement. There is very big money on the table, a lot of people's interest, or a small handful of people's interest, not the general public in general, because they're talking about jobs and what we're going to create. You know, it's like looking at the shiny thing here on the right hand as they propose these things, telling you, oh, it's going to mean thousands of jobs. You know what? I would guess that there would be less than 1,000, maybe 700 jobs, if that, at the airport in any near future plan.
Well, and are they jobs for local people here, or are they bringing in their new people to fill those jobs? Because if it's Paso High School going on to college, we don't have the math. We don't have Go ahead.
The industrialization of you know the corporatization of our city by a small handful of people, and these people are interested in one thing and one thing only, their interests, and the people that are their puppets in your city government are driving this train. And I'd be very suspicious of people that are running for office that have certain endorsements from certain people already set up who nobody even knows about. We have no idea who these people are. And anybody who even asks a question in this city is considered a troublemaker, you know, a mean
person. Well, welcome to the party.
Or somebody who doesn't have a good disposition and just doesn't want to get along. No, you actually have to be an adult and ask questions and not accept everything that people are giving you, and be very suspicious of these people that are running for office that are being endorsed right away by these people, because I'll tell you right now, it ain't for your best interest, I assure you.
Well, thank you for bringing that to light. Appreciate your call, as always.
Okay, thanks.
I was trying to get to the other call before we come up on a break in a few minutes, but thank you for calling in and talking about these endorsements. And I think as people realize, you know, having endorsements come from the dais, it's just, it is the cabal, and it is where if you are a leader and you want to be in government leadership, you should welcome accountability. It should be something where you want to be transparent. You want to be open. You want to have good ideas come forward. So we want more leaders that are like that. So thank you for calling in. You're on the air.
Thanks, Darsha. Sorry to interrupt the great things you're probably going to say if I hadn't. If we look at our county, San Luis Obispo County, just as conservatives in the county, forget the primary election, we didn't get anything out of that last election, did we?
No, I don't think that we did. And that's similar to what ends up happening at the state level as well.
Okay.
Now,
the only bright thing I got out of it was finding Aaron Woody. knowing that he's a like-minded for the future kind of guy. Whether he's Republican or not, he seemed like-minded, and he was a bright, shining thing to me. But none of our guys won. None of our gals won.
Well, and it is a primary, and part of the issue with California and how the primaries are in California when you have the top two, jungle primary, as they call it, or mm-hmm. where you could end up with two Democrats running against each other. So you have ultimately what ends up happening is where we now have in this state, it's not a republic because you have a supermajority of congressional seats that are from the Democratic Party that is leaning, it's not even leaning left anymore. It is fallen over. And the Democratic Socialist Party that they've even touted, hey, we had 76 races, 38 in 38 elections, we've won. People have gone forward and they've been selected for the general election. When you have a one-party state, it is no longer, there's no longer government that's actually functioning. And so with this Prop 50 redistricting that happened last November, what that did is right now there were nine Republican seats in Congress from California out of 52. Then the redistricting happened. Doug LaMalfa got taken out, and I believe he was taken out. He was up north, so that now has a special election coming forward. And with the California Prop 50 redistribution, they're pitting Republican areas against Republicans so that then people are having to run as an independent. And what that did is those districts are now being decided, and it's very likely that we'll end up with maybe five Republican congressional seats in Congress from California out of 52. So what we're looking at is now 20 years for state offices where a Republican has not been elected to that state office. And I can say I know how part of that happens. It's literally death by a thousand cuts. But when you have our voter rolls, and I have some really good information on the voter rolls for California, but when you have our voter rolls that are not cleaned up, are not, you know, that have even in our county, I can give you the numbers. There's 3,500 to 4,000 undeliverable ballots every single election. I'm down there, I see it. Let's say it's even 3,000. You know, let's say it's 2% of this up-to-date, quote-unquote, up-to-date voter rolls that come from the VoteCal system that has all of the DMV information, all of the national change of address, all the Social Security information, Health and Human Services. There's a lot of data that goes into the voter rolls that is supposed to keep them up to date. So how is it that every election we still have 3,500, 4,000 undeliverable ballots when they're mailed out to 185,000? We still have all of those undeliverable ballots when that voter roll is updated hourly, daily, weekly, monthly. That's one issue. And the other issue is then the...
Get them.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Why couldn't I get the voter rolls and call the numbers on there and say, do you still live at this address? And find out that about a third of them are still current and the other two-thirds don't live there anymore.
So there are many different ways you can do that. It's actually a public information disclosure. You, as a private citizen, I can purchase the voter rolls. We have to sign confidentiality. We have to sign that we're not going to sell it or release that information to unauthorized parties. And you can pay for that. It's about, depending on what reports you get, anywhere from $150 to $250 each time you request those voter rolls. And that's just for our county. So statewide, the Department of Justice, Harmeet Dhillon from the Civil Rights Division, has contacted every Secretary of State and said, we want your voter rolls and we want to collaborate with you. But they're not asking, they're demanding.
That's right. Mom, don't look in my sock drawer is what we're saying to them. Right.
So I do know.
I just wanted to look down at our feet for a second. I don't want to take you away from your chance to teach the rest of us, but looking down at our feet, this county election we just had, if we skip the primaries, we didn't get a thing. We lost everything. We lost every race.
But it's by design. So the elections are made or lost in the primaries. So there, it becomes a selection. So if there are good people that could rise forward and could be part of that, they're pushed out, and it's the top two vote getters. Yep. It's already done. It's already, the fix is in, as they say. So we'll come back after the break. I'll explain a little bit more. But I believe that there is a period of accountability coming.
We have a beautiful new furniture store in Paso Robles, right next to Walmart. Ricky's Furniture Outlet, locally owned by fifth generation Californian. Ricky's offers a large variety of furniture, Western art pieces, and specializes in custom sofas. Ricky's bright, beautiful showroom is a breath of fresh air here in the North County. Ricky's Furniture Outlet, on Niblick, next to Walmart, in Paso Robles. Lint Patrol specializes in dryer vent cleaning. You can trust Dylan with Lint Patrol to keep your vents clean and safe, and this helps your dryer run more efficiently and reduces the risk of a house fire. Dylan has over 6 years of appliance preventative maintenance experience and is knowledgeable in all things appliance care. This is an affordable, simple way to help protect your home. Contact Dylan today at 805-975-5176 or visit lintpatrolca.com.
It's funny how the little things can make the biggest difference. Take hearing aid batteries. The batteries work just fine, but opening the package is another story. That's why Peter at Hearing Aid Specialists is proud to offer the new, easy-to-open hearing aid batteries. They're the only office in town stocking them. And for KPRL listeners, Peter has a neighborly deal. Buy one case of easy-to-open batteries and get one case free. Call 805-460-7385. 805-460-7385. Hearing Aid Specialists.
And welcome back to Open Mic Friday, Darsha and Kenny show. Kenny is here in spirit, and we're hoping for safe travels so he can be back here next Friday. And we already have a call that's been here, and we'll hope that it's still on the line. Sometimes when we go through the break, it doesn't manage to hold on through the break. Welcome. You're on the air on Sound Off.
Hi, Darsha.
How are you?
I sure appreciate you.
Ramona, you are the largest and the biggest patriot for someone that, what, are you 4'11"? How tall are you?
What?
You're the biggest patriot I know in a less than 5 foot tall body.
Right. Anyway, I want to thank you, especially when you talk about founding fathers and you talk about the Constitution. So I've been reading quite a bit how Christian history paved the way for the U.S. independence. And so I've been reading a lot. The founding fathers studied Genesis to Revelation. God shows that he is sovereign, that people are made in his likeness and image, and that he created moral laws to govern men as surely as he ordained physical laws to govern the universe. And the principles embodied in the Holy Scriptures echoed throughout history and directly shaped the thinking of America's founders and the early settlers who laid the foundation for their historic declaration. And I was reading where it said, we believe that no government can exist in peace except such laws are framed and held inviolate as will secure to each individual the free exercise of conscience and the right and control of property and the protection of life. And that also governments are held accountable for the laws that they make because for the good and safety of society. So all these people that are congressmen, presidents, they're going to be held accountable for the laws that they make because we need the safety of society. So they're going to be held accountable if they make bad laws.
And what I think has I absolutely agree. And the more that you look into the WIG, W-H-I-G, philosophy and movement, these were Scotch-Irish coming to the United States of America. It wasn't the United States of America, but coming to America. These were people who had been persecuted, religiously persecuted. They were the Protestants. They were the Presbyterians. They were seeking religious freedom. And when you have a group of people, what did the colonies, when these people came over, whether it was the Mayflower or boats and ships afterwards, what did they have as their central, like growing up, we had the Britannica, the Encyclopedia Britannica. What did they all have in common that was where they learned to read, where they had an understanding of politics, an understanding of government, an understanding of how to be people and a moral people? It was all biblical. Many of the children would learn to read from the Bible. And so they had an understanding of this. They had an understanding of what God's laws, and that's why in the Constitution and in the Declaration of Independence, that was a powerful document, it was coming from, I think, all but one was a Christian, two were Christians, and one was Jewish, and one was a deist or atheist, we'll call. So they were deeply religious people, deeply religious men coming forward and trying to form a country that operated under nature's God, God and nature's God. And this document was a compact. The United States Constitution was a compact between God and the people. And who stands to lose from that? The monarchies and the persecutors, the church that became the Anglican Church was the government. And so all of the amendments and everything in the Constitution was set up so that there could be a compact between God and the people. No intermediary. Sorry, the Pope, same thing. There's Roman Catholic people, very nice, very whatever, but it was not how our government was formed. So I agree with you. It does come back to these rights come from God. They don't come from the state. And what is communism? What is socialism? What is all of the other governmental throughout the world? It ends in democracy and it ends in tyranny because the rights are what has been given from the monarch, or the rules come from the monarch, or they come from the governmental structure, that it's not from God. So how do we get back to that, Ramona? How do we have the people recognize that they have authority, comes from God, and to be able to use that in a wise and godly manner? How do we get there?
Oh, I agree. I think one way is that they need to understand the Constitution the way the Founding Fathers wrote it. And you can't save something you don't know anything about. So they need to study the way the Founding Fathers wrote that Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Those two are freedom documents.
They are. Liberty.
Yes, and until the American people wake up and realize those are freedom documents and they need to understand it the way the Founding Fathers wrote it, both of them.
Amen. Thank you, and thank you for your patriotism.
Well, I thank you. I sure appreciate you, and I'm so happy when you mention these wonderful documents, because we had some special Founding Fathers. They studied the history. They knew the ancient history of the Israelites. They understood the Old and New Testament, and that's how they came up with this. They were inspired by God. It's just like Benjamin Franklin said, we're trying to write this and put it together, but until we get on our knees, until we pray, then that's when the revelation came to them, exactly what to put down.
And whether the sun was rising or the sun was setting on that chair behind him.
And he said, it's rising.
That's right.
Well, thank you, Darsha.
All right, thank you. Have a great day. Have a great week.
Okay, bye.
Thanks. And I do have a text that came in, and what an amazing person. I love her. So Kessler versus Addis is on the November 2026 ballot. Thank you. I agree. There wasn't anyone that won outright, I guess is what I was saying. Sonia Shaw, amazing candidate. Shannon Kessler down in South County and forward up into Northern San Luis Obispo, Monterey County, all the way up. She absolutely needs your support. She's been backing no boys and girls sports, standing up for our children, protecting our children. Bob Smith, also South County, I believe that's Congressional District 24, amazing candidate, retired Navy, doing great things. Sari Dominguez, also South County. So there is a incredible group of people of people that are coming forward, taking a stand, wanting to show that, yes, we can do this. We can have conservative ideas and principles come forward and be participating in government. So I'll go back to this one disclosure that did come forward out of Maricopa County. And John Solomon has been going through the declassification documents that President Trump mentioned in his speech. And in those documents was a story about Maricopa County, and specifically a search warrant that had been made, and it was a residence in Fountain Hills. And the reason why I remember it and paid attention to it, I even have a redacted search warrant, partially redacted search warrant, was because it's about 15 miles away from my parents' home in Paradise Valley area and in North Scottsdale area. And what was retrieved from that, the reason why there was a search warrant, was because there were an IT person that gained access to the Maricopa County voter rolls. This is prior to the November 2020 election, November 4th. I believe it occurred somewhere within October 21st of 2020 to November 3rd or 4th of 2020, a release of 600 and some thousand voter data, including the confidential voter data. And the issue with this was that the FBI did raid his home. There was the search warrant. They retrieved hard drives, any kind of electronic data, and it was never brought forward. That information existed. The people didn't know. Stephen Richer, who was the county clerk recorder, mentioned that there might have been a breach of some of the voter data in January of 2021, and it never came forward. The FBI had all of that information, all of that documentation. All they needed to do was say, hey, there has been a breach of the data in this Arizona state that was then declared. All the counting stopped, and it was declared that Biden had won the election in Arizona. Therefore, we could say that he won the entire country. And so going back that far, I know I saw the search warrant, and that all that information is coming out. There's also a Michigan story that was suppressed, 8 to 10,000 in what Muskegon, Michigan, 8 to 10,000 voter applications for registration were submitted to one city clerk. It was there was an arrest made. FBI took over, suppressed. So we'll bring back more.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL
next week
is brought to you by Lint Patrol, specializing in dryer vent cleaning. Don't overwork your dryer or let your vent start a fire. Contact Dylan at lintpatrolca.com or call 805-975-5176.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.
It's 2 o'clock.